I'm Juliana Grassi, your host of the Rare Disease Report podcast. For this episode, Dr. Barry Byrne talks about the anticipated FDA decision for a two-part combination therapy that will be treating late-onset Pompe disease if approved. Dr. Byrne is the Associate Chair of Pediatrics and Director of the Powell Gene Therapy Center at the University of Florida.
Good to talk to you today, Juliana. My name is Barry Byrne. I am a professor of pediatrics at the University of Florida, and have been working in the area of Pompe disease for a little over 20 years now, because as a pediatric cardiologist, we had the opportunity in my clinical practice to see patients with early onset Pompe disease who have a particularly unique feature of significant and severe cardiomyopathy that is really an early life life-threatening. Over that period of time, though, we've studied both the early onset and the later onset disease in research studies and in my basic science laboratory.
Wow, excellent. So then can you speak to just the main characterization of the disease and how Pompe disease presents?
Sure. Pompe disease is a rare but an inherited disorder that affects many, many systems in the body, particularly the related to muscle function, and leads to muscle weakness and difficulty breathing over time. The disease is caused by a lack of an enzyme called acid alpha glucosidase. We typically abbreviate that as GAA, which is inside of cells and serves to recycle glycogen, or the energy stored as glycogen in cells, and the absence of the enzyme leads to a buildup of this storage material called glycogen. We normally break down those sugars, the glycogen, to both provide energy and recycle them. And that's what's absent in Pompe disease, the ability to recycle stored energy as glucose, known as glycogen. So that causes cells to undergo changes that in the muscle lead to weakness, and in neurons can lead to loss of neuronal function that contributes to the weakness that's seen in Pompe patients.
And as a rare disease, do you know much about discovery of the disease and some of the background and kind of how the field has progressed in terms of treatment and research and development?
Pompe disease was originally described by a Dutch pathologist, and the disease bears his name, in the early 1900s. And he observed the significant heart enlargement in an infant patient who had generalized weakness due to Pompe. Later, a group of scientists discovered the molecular basis of the condition and subsequently understood the gene that was involved in 1963. So it's relatively recent, detailed understanding of the condition, and we're still learning more today because of research that's being done both on the biochemistry and on the clinical findings in patients.
So there is ongoing research. We know that there's some FDA decisions coming up, but before we get into that, you know, how much does awareness and advocacy play a role in treatment development?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because certainly in any rare disease, awareness is important for early identification and work that the Muscular Dystrophy Association has done to develop that awareness in the neuromuscular community and in the population at large has been enormously helpful in obtaining newborn screening approval for Pompe disease. So for the past several years now, most states in the U.S. identify affected individuals in the first few days of life. This has been critically important to enable early treatment of the infantile onset form of the disease and help reduce the time committed to understanding in late onset patients why they have muscle weakness when it wasn't immediately apparent if they were either late childhood or early adulthood. So awareness and having providers think about Pompe as a possible diagnosis has really helped the patient community gain access to new therapies.
Definitely. And I've heard that in a few, you know, genetic rare diseases where that screening is becoming more common practice. So how would that differentiate like the route of treatment or management from determining that early versus late onset?
Sure. The initial screening test done on the conventional blood spot that infants have at birth is based on enzyme activity levels, and those with low activity levels below the threshold of even the late or the early onset disease get additional genetic testing, and then they're seen in one of the care centers that we have, at least from the MDA's, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's perspective, across the country. Once the diagnosis is confirmed by the genetic testing, then the providers make a decision about what form of treatment is needed and when to begin that therapy. Those with later onset disease are often followed closely for a number of years to determine when it would be ideal to begin treatment and which treatment to use, because there are now many options for patients, which is great for patients to have alternative access to therapies.
Yeah, and that leads me to my next question. I was wondering what the treatment landscape was like for this disease, as that can vary across different rare diseases, but specifically with the combined treatment that's undergoing FDA review right now. You mentioned it earlier, the SIPA. Yes. And then Meglustat. Do you know how that compares to the other treatments that are available already? And do you know if there's an anticipated approval, or is it kind of up in the air right now?
So the first efforts to help repair the muscle damage in Pompe disease were developed in the early 2000s, and a drug called Myozyme was approved in 2006. This was a recombinant protein that was given to patients every other week, essentially for the lifetime. And we knew that that drug helped improve the cardiac function in infants with early onset disease and had some influence in lessening the rate of progression of weakness in adult patients. Subsequent to that, several groups have investigated ways of improving the potency and success of enzyme replacement therapy. And the drug that's under consideration now by the FDA is a combination of a new protein called CYP-alglucosidase alpha and a small molecule drug that's taken by mouth called miglustat. And that two-component therapy is designed to prevent the breakdown of the protein therapy in the blood before it reaches the muscle cells and improve its uptake into muscle cells. So that combination therapy is being considered in two parts by the FDA, and we hope to learn whether the data that's been collected thus far is compelling for the use of this in the market.
Can you share a little bit about ways that this disease affects, whether it's pediatric patients or adult patients, how it just inhibits their daily life?
Yeah, certainly muscle function is critically important in all the activities of daily living. And as I mentioned in the beginning, in this condition, both the neurological aspect and the muscle weakness affect breathing. So patients who have Pompe disease have limitations in their walking ability. They may need breathing assistance at night. Sometimes this impacts their bone health, and their have in the early onset disease have some skeletal abnormalities that may require care, and overall does impact quality of life And that's why we think that additional therapies will potentially, one of the things that's been studied is what impact a treatment has had on quality of life. And it's quite encouraging that patients feel that they have significant improvements that leads to a higher quality of life when they're receiving one of the treatments that are available.
Is there anything else on the spectrum here that we didn't discuss that you wanted to bring up?
So treatments in Pompe disease have relied on a long history of discovery of the underlying cause and mechanism of the condition. And there have been so many contributors to that rich history for developing treatments in Pompe disease. I know that when we first started our own research in the area, support from the Muscular Dystrophy Association was critical in helping us begin that research. And certainly now across the MDA Care Center network, we see there's an opportunity for expert providers to help patients receive therapies like this one. So I think we just have to keep in mind that the ability to understand the basis of the disease and then apply those discoveries to the treatment of the disease in and help patients in their everyday lives is really the type of approach and benefit we hope will exist for all neuromuscular diseases in the future.
Excellent. Thank you. And then something did just come to mind while you were saying that. So I've heard that sometimes when like a totally novel or at least novel to the field treatment comes, you know, onto the market or gets approved, that sometimes there's also a learning curve for both patients and physicians in actually putting it into practice and just getting comfortable with it. So I'm just wondering how familiar do you think physicians are with these treatments and how comfortable would patients have to be able to engage in a new treatment like this?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think all of the medical community really is faced with new discoveries and becoming lifelong learners. So there's always an opportunity to gain new expertise through podcasts and webinars that are done for providers. And certainly patient advocates help educate us all the time about what their goals and objectives are. And we just have to keep listening and trying to provide the best care we can for our patients by being good listeners about what are their needs.
Thank you so much, Dr. Barry Byrne, for sharing your insight on this incredibly rare and debilitating disease. With the second part of the FDA decision anticipated to be made today, check out hcplive.com and follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter to be notified when that decision is made. Once again, thanks for listening. I'm Juliana Grassi, your host of the Rare Disease Report.